been over.
Is it? Is it over? No, it's not. It's over, all right. The game is over, and Australia have done it again. They have whitewashed New Zealand 3-0 in the Chapel Hadley series, and for that man, it is a very proud moment to end a one-day career.
Yes, a 3-0 whitewash to Australia. They retain the Chapel Hadley Trophy. I'm Laura McGoldrick. Thank you for joining us on the Smith & Hessen podcast. I'm coming to you from my family holiday in Australia because I love the Smith & Hessen podcast so much. And I love Ian Smith and Mike Hessen, who are also joining me. Ian Smith just back from Australia from commentating that Chapel Hadley series. He's coming to us from the Hawke's Bay. And Mike Hessen, his second home, home away from home, coming to us from India. Good evening, good afternoon. Hello, gentlemen.
Laura.
Hello, Laura.
Good to see you both. Look, it's been a tough stint for the Black Caps over in Australia, going down 3-0, Australia retaining the Chapel Hadley Trophy. Smithy, you were commentating from Sydney. What was it like for you? And I think the first question I probably need to ask is how do we now go about figuring out how to beat Australia in Australia? You made some really valid points about when you were playing Australia in the 92 World Cup, and it was Martin Crowe who said you've got to look at, take away the name Australia and just look at the colours. Maybe we just play colours. Is that something that we perhaps need to look into? What was your take on the whole series?
Yeah, well, Laura, it was a bit depressing, actually. Just like when I went over to commentate on the three-match test series those years ago, I had high expectations because I felt like we had probably our best unit, and I felt like we would be very competitive. And as it turned out, we were competitive for portions of the game. So it was quite depressing, actually, to lose that series 3-0. And to try and analyse why, and to sit alongside the Australians, who give us great respect, I've got to say. The commentary team I worked in were quite surprised that we weren't able to win a game, particularly from the situations we found ourselves in the first two in particular. So they were surprised because they rate us very highly and they rate a number of our individuals within our side. So that was a little bit of a downer from my point of view. I also, I made that point about the Australian side being referred to as the yellow team back in our day, and India were the blue team, and Pakistan the green team. West Indies were the purple team. It was just a situation where Martin Crowe decided, let's take the names and the history out of it and just put a new label on them and attack them on that basis. And I've got to say, having seen it now through test matches, through one-day cricket, a bit of T20 in the World Cup final last time, there's some sort of mental block there. There is definitely, because we'd have got over the line against most other sides in a number of those games.
I think you did right. And I think as a fan watching, you did feel like, you know, we had Australia in good positions where we just didn't look to attack. We just didn't keep our foot on the throat. I think of that those first two games particularly. Mike Hessen, what was your take on the series? I mean, you've coached a New Zealand side that's won a Chapel Hadley trophy before. You must have felt a bit disappointed about what happened with the Black Caps over in Australia.
Yeah, look, we actually won a couple of Chapel Hadleys, but we won both of them in New Zealand. And I think there is a difference. I think the challenge is not so much against Australia, because even in world tournaments, you know, T20s, we've won games away from home. It tends to be in Australia. And it tends to be often we don't even get ourselves in a position to dominate or to win. And that was probably the most frustrating thing, you know, as a spectator, is that we had many chances during that series to absolutely dominate and win the game quite comfortably. And we became a little bit passive. And that was probably the most frustrating thing, is that I think we all saw that conditions against the new ball, especially batting, was challenging. It was challenging throughout the series. So to think that, you know, you'd go out and take on the new ball in those conditions, there was plenty of fear associated with it. There was a tennis ball bounce, ball swung a little bit, and it was more about sucking it up a little bit. But once you got through the new ball, it was very much battable. It was able to actually Still apply some pressure back on the Australians, which we never really did through the middle. And the one time in the first game where we got ourselves set up perfectly, the last 10 overs, we fell over poorly. And we got 230 rather than we probably should have got 250 minimum. But then even in that game where we had Australia 5 for 40 in reply, they were then facing Neesham and Bracewell. And that was really confusing to me, is that we've got a situation where the last 10 overs of 15 overs of the game is actually irrelevant. You've got the set pair at 6 and 7, you've got Maxwell to come, and then after that you've got the bowlers. So you need 2 wickets. And we went into a conservative phase. And that's not the way we operate. Like, that was a real... I'm not unsure why we did that. And we continued with that sort of method. You know, a little bit better in the second innings, where we bowled 6. Henry bowled 6, but then we still backed off for another 18 overs before he came back again. So, you know, there were times where we had the game, we were the better of Australia in their own conditions. It wasn't like we were dominated, and then it was our choice in terms of how we operated. And I think I, like many, were a bit frustrated that we backed off in those situations.
Let's go back to game one, Smithy, and I'd like your take on this. So Kane Williamson, I mean, a lot of questions around his captaincy, particularly in that first game when really we should have absolutely won, I think definitely the first two. New Zealand were in a good position to do that. That first one, he didn't have Tim Southee there to help bounce ideas off around, you know, the captaincy in the field, where to bowl and who to bowl and at what times. Trent Bolt post-match did an interview and said he didn't want to come off. He would have happily continued bowling for, you know, even 8 overs. What was your take on his decision making during this series, and probably particularly that first game, because it did set the tone for how he continued to captain?
Yeah, I think it reflects in the way he batted. To be fair, he just looks like a guy who's been away from cricket, an important cricket, for quite some period of time, and so his decision making with his tactics was sort of symptomatic of the way he batted as well, and the fact that he kind of let things drift along there for a while, and he did back off, and it was quite surprising to see Trent Bolt actually sort of go against his captain's tactics within the media. You don't see that very often, and I just couldn't believe that. You know, he as Mike said, he just said to Australia, "I've got you where I want you, but here's your chance to get out of it." Theoretically, and I'll just have 3 or, you know, 4 guys inside the circle. I won't push you. If you want to pick up 4 and 5 and over against our lesser bowlers for, you know, 10 overs and get yourself back on track, help yourself. And that's theoretically what it looked like from the outside. It was pretty passive, very, very passive captaincy, what I would be thinking there. And I don't know whether he would have been different on New Zealand soil, on English soil, on Indian soil. I don't know whether what he was scared of at that point, but it looked very timid to me. And also, the other thing too that struck me about Kane in particular and one or two of the other players is that they didn't appear to be urgent enough when we were getting bogged down with the bat. They didn't seem to be looking for options, and they were, you know, the defence looked nice and it looked sound as such, and it didn't look like they were going to get out, but they weren't going anywhere. And it was suiting Aaron Finch and the Australians absolutely perfectly. They just sat. I mean, the number of dot balls in the first 2 games of this series that New Zealand hit back to bowlers or hit straight to mid on, the guy that was at short mid wicket was the busiest guy on the field but didn't have to move. They just were so... passive and in terms of the way they were thinking about those games. That's what worried me about it, and the mindset was quite clear. So I don't think we were tactically very good. I don't think we were aggressive enough in the right areas. We backed off, and as a result, if you back off, and I don't care where, if you play Australia on the moon, they'll love that. They'll absolutely love it.
Yeah, the dot balls were mentioned a lot, actually, by the commentary team over there. Kane Williamson, if we look at his numbers, he's 45 from 71, 17 from 58 balls, and 27 from 56 balls. Now, that's a lot of dot balls, as Smithy mentioned there. When you're looking at the way he's batting and how just it just doesn't, it's not the Kane Williamson we are used to seeing, where everything's fluid and the movements feel just, it's easy to watch. Not a lot of the batting felt easy to watch. What was your take on it?
Well, I think conditions did play a little part in that. In fact, you know, Kane we know is a genius in terms of manoeuvring the ball. The thing with Kane is when the ball kept hitting the top of the bat, he was really struggling to manoeuvre it for once. So there were times where he came down the wicket to try and generate some momentum. Because at that time, when you know you can't get ones, you actually have to take risks. You have to take educated or calculated risks in terms of either going through or over the field. Because you can't manoeuvre the ball into that gap at cover point. You can't manoeuvre down the ground for one because often they'll have the guys up. So you actually do have to take calculated risks. And that's what Kane's normally very, very good at. But if you are in a slightly defensive frame of mind, whether it be individually or team-wise, you don't take that risk. And you're always waiting for them to bowl a poor ball or the fact you can get off strike. Then another two, three dots appear, the pressure builds up, and then all of a sudden you're going to explode. I mean, Kane's dismissal off Maxwell to hit it down deep mid-wicket's throat with mid on up was purely a reflection of a build-up of pressure. You know, normally he would come down the wicket with some intent, hit that over long on, make them force long on to go back, but he just didn't have the confidence to do that. And I think we all saw that second, that dismissal of that slow full toss from Zampa. I mean, there's no way in the world if Kane Williamson was in the right frame of mind that that's not 10 rows back. So that's more a mindset thing for me. I think he, along with many, dug themselves a bit of a hole and then basically almost imploded.
Let's take a look at some of Kane Williamson's dismissals in this series. So you look at those, Smithy, and you go, okay, we've got a 50-over World Cup in a year's time. The last one we had was 2019. We know how close we got to winning it then. Are you feeling like this is a team that could go all the way? Because I don't think many people will think that after this series.
Look, you never write them off because, you know, they've proven that they can get to, you know, the grand final three times now in recent years. So I'm not writing them off. And a lot of these personnel are in common for that. So they've got that in the back of their mind. They just got to get their mindset back right. They've got to get, you know, their stroke play back, their tactics right. But it's no point, and we'll be naming our sides very shortly or our squads very shortly for what we think should come up for this T20 World Cup in particular. It's not like we can go back into the bank and pick out others and say, well, he's ready, he's right for the picking, we forgot about him. There's not much left to be able to pick from, to be perfectly honest. So it's a case of in these we trust and in these we back to get the job done. You know, I just felt like we didn't come away. You know, when you play a series of cricket like that, you want to come away with a few pluses. Even if you lose, you want to come away with a few pluses. I'm not really sure, apart from Trent Bolt, there was anyone that would be hopping on the plane to come home from Cairns and think, I'm really good. I'm good with my game at the moment. I feel really good about where I am at the moment. I think if we were playing in a World Cup tomorrow, I think I'm at the peak of my powers. Only Trent Bolt, for me, could say that. And that is a bit concerning because the World T20 World Cup is next month. It's not, you know, in a few months' time. Where are they going to find this from and this confidence from and this performance from? They'll have a few build-up games, which are now loom is so important in preparation for what's coming up. And they've just got to get themselves in the right frame of mind. Kane Williamson has to play every one of those games because we know the old saying that form is temporary, class is permanent, but you have to find form. And the only place Kane Williamson will find form is under pressure in the middle. And that is where he'll get his game back. So he's got to play in those. And then we start to tinker around with our other options around that. But he's the man. He's the man that's got to be. And that's the most concerning topic. Not saying for one second he doesn't deserve to be there. I'm not saying he won't come right. But I'm saying he's running out of time to do so.
Yeah, so as the coach, Hess, if you're Gary Stead right now, are you going, okay, we're going to have to just brush off Chapel Hadley and go, you know what, that's one day, and right now it's all the focus is toward this T20 World Cup. We've got the Tri-Series that's happening in Christchurch between them and Pakistan and Bangladesh before they go to Australia and then crack into a warm-up game against South Africa. And then the first matchup, the first team New Zealand face is Australia in Sydney. What are you saying as coach Gary Stead right now?
Look, I think you're parking the information that you gathered from that series, and you would have gathered a lot about individuals. And I know the situation, the conditions will most likely be very different than what they face in the T20 World Cup, but it did expose some players under pressure in terms of decision-making, in terms of whether they are expressive when they're under pressure or whether they go back into their shell. And that's the one thing, obviously, we can't have with the T20 World Cup is noticing guys that when they get under the pump, they had to those defence mechanisms with the ball or those that ability with the bat to be able to apply pressure back on the opposition again. So that's really useful information. But I think, yeah, you will park the rest of it. You will already have had your T20 plan pretty much well in place in terms of what your lineup is. It's now a matter of making sure those last two or three positions and probably the batting order also, that you're really comfortable with it. Coming into that first game against Australia.
So, Smithy, if you're looking at the rest of the world right now, you've got Steve Smith found some serious form in that last ODI. He's got fantastic 100, some saying one of his best ever. Other teammates, Marnus Labuschagne, for example, said he reckons that was the best he's seen him bat in a long time. Kohli came into form in that Asia Cup, also scored a ton. New Zealand, where do you think they sit? I know we haven't seen them play T20s in a while. They made it all the way to the final against Australia in the UAE only a year ago. So what do you think New Zealand's chances are in this tournament?
Well, we all know the nature of T20 cricket. And, you know, things momentum can change on the back of a really strong performance and it can just turn around in a very short space. But look, I think there's any number of about five or six teams can win this T20 World Cup, and that's the beauty of it. I think we know that we'll get away from the Kansas and the Townsvilles. We'll get back to those venues that we know will be very good batting surfaces. There'll be bigger grounds, more familiar grounds. So the conditions, we know what we're going into. Australia will provide fantastic conditions there. And then you look at the strengths of all the sides going into this. And I think we're still very much in terms of our ability to try and win this thing. But there are some very good sides around. And you can't write any side off, I don't think, out of about five. I think there are five genuine contenders, which is great for a World Cup. So we sit in that five. We do. It's not like I wouldn't be saying if we won it, we would be massive underdogs because we've been to the final. It was only 12 months ago in this very competition. And because it was only 12 months ago, we're basically going to be looking at some very similar squads to what we went up against last time. So I back us in that regard. But I'm just saying that we've got to find some form and some confidence very, very quickly somewhere before we hit Australia at the Sydney Cricket Ground on October the 22nd. It will be a packed house. It will be very much Australian-dominated, the crowd. That us against Australia syndrome that we've been talking about and maybe a wee bit worried about in Australia, as Hess says, those factors are there staring us in the face. We know that. We know what to expect in that regard. The fact of the matter is, how are we going to overcome? Because there's not too many second chances. You don't go into too many repercharges in a T20 World Cup. You've got to front up.
Yeah, you absolutely do. So, Mike Hessen, what does your New Zealand 11 look like going into that first up game against Australia at the SCG?
Well, I've picked a squad of 15, but now you want me to narrow it down to 11, sure. I'll still
you
go
can do, you know what? I'll give you 15, Hess. I'll give you 15. You can have 15.
I'll give you my 15. So, I've got Gubdul, Allen, Williamson, Conway, Phillips, Mitchell, Neesham, Bracewell, Satner, Sodhi, Southey, Ferguson, Bolt, Chapman, and I've gone Adam Milne / Sears / Duffy. So it just depends on Adam Milne's fitness, really. And what they like of Ben Sears. I mean, they like that extra pace. That's why Milne's not there. That's why Ben Sears is there. But if they don't like either. Then I think Ben Duffy's Jacob Duffy's the man. He's been performing well for New Zealand A, and when he's played for New Zealand in T20 cricket, he's done a good job. He's probably our best death bowler in terms of bowling Yorkers, so I think he's an option.
For you, Smithy?
Right, okay, well, I'm pretty much the same personnel within the 15 because, as I said before, outside of our squad as such, there's not a lot. There is not a lot left that you could throw into a World Cup next month, as I say. So I've gone Guptill, Allen. I'm toying with this. I really would like to see Conway bat in the top three. So therefore, for the first time in a long time, I've got Williamson at four. So I've got, and I want a left-hander in my top three. I really do. So I want Conway, and he's such a very good player. So that would be Guptill, Allen, Conway, Williamson. Phillips is dynamic. We saw that. He just got to play, Glenn Phillips. He's got to play. He hasn't got a fear of Australia because he hadn't played them before. Finn Allen hasn't got a fear of Australia. He hasn't played them before until now, and he did pretty well. So, you know, I don't think that's a big issue for me. Mitchell, you've got two Mr. Fix-its in there. You've got Williamson at four and Mitchell at six if things don't go well. And then you throw in Jimmy Neesham. Jimmy Neesham is your X factor for me because, you know, he can hit it out of the park first ball. He's a bit, I labelled him a bit of a poor man's Glenn Maxwell. I think he's better than that. I think he's a better cricketer than a poor man's Maxwell, but he's that type of ilk. Sander comes in as a white ball bowler, but goodness me, I'm with Kerry O'Keefe, and I spoke to Kerry O'Keefe a lot about Mitchell Santner. Just got to get people out. Somehow you've got to get people out. You can't just drift. You know, you've got to try and create opportunities to get people out. Otherwise, you know, you're not a danger. You just become a factor as opposed to a danger. Got to have Ish Sodhi in there. You've got to have a spinner who can get people out, even though he goes for a few. You've got to have the pace of Ferguson and Bolt, obviously. Southie is a given because Southie's got leadership qualities. He's also got the ability just to sum things up, and he's a nice factor for me. Bracewell, yes, although I don't see Michael Bracewell being a factor with the ball just yet. To class him as a genuine all-rounder in world cricket, no, he's not. He's a batter who can win you games at the end with his power, and he can bowl you one or two overs max in T20 cricket. Unless you get a minefield, he isn't going to be a big factor with the ball. Sears I like, and I think you've just got to – he played a little bit on this current – not in this last series, but before that. They tested him out. He got wickets. I don't mind him. He's an unknown quality as well, and he's got pace. And I threw in Cleaver. Cleaver-Chapman bracket for me. I looked at Chapman. I really did. But if something goes down or something goes wrong with Conway, I'm not relying on Phillips in a T20 World Cup. I'm not relying on Phillips, who has done no wicket-keeping for my purposes. In a World Cup final, do you want Glenn Phillips to come in and stand in as a keeper? No, not for me. I think it's still enough factor, if you're going to play spinners, to have a genuine guy or experienced glove man in the squad. So my bracket is Cleaver for Chapman, and I'll take Cleaver.
Okay, so there are the lads' two World Cup squads. I like that. It's being announced next week, so it'll be interesting to see how you boys go in that space. But let's just talk quickly about this Chapel Hadley series, just the end of it from an Australian perspective. I'd like to mention and make mention of Aaron Finch, the captain who stepped away from the game. He'd had a rough trot, a rough run of form in the build-up to his decision to step down as captain in the one-day side. What do you think about him, Smithy? I mean, he's done a lot. I read a lot of articles about him, you know, helping transform Australia's reputation in a lot of ways in that shorter format. And he absolutely endorsed David Warner as the next potential one-day captain for Australia.
Yeah, well, that'll be interesting to see. That'll be a board decision, very much a board decision, and they're going to have to make a big call on that. I've always been an advocate, if you're prepared to let the likes of Warner and Steve Smith score hundreds for you and give them standing ovations when they walk off and you have fully approval of their performance on the field, what's the difference? Why can't they be captain? I mean, to be honest, they're either out there or they're not. You're either punishing them or you're not. So, I mean, no difference to me with Warner and Steve Smith being considered for captaincy options now within Australia. So, no problem there. Finch, highly respected. Very, very highly respected cricketer around the world. Fashioned a very good career. You do not score 17 one-day international hundreds if you're a mug. He is a damn good player and has been for a long period of time. He has just fallen short of his own standards. And whether he was pushed or whether the signs were there, he made the right call at the right time. And no one who I was working with thought anything less of Aaron Finch for saying, I just don't think I'm up to all three forms or all two forms anymore. And Australia needs a new starting point in terms of leadership for 50-over cricket. We'll play in the T20 World Cup, no doubt about that. Probably will play very well with the weight of responsibility of the other side off it. So Finch, very good career, terrific. And also something for us to think about there. Is it still meritorious when you look around the world of the very best players, and Kane is one of them, Kane Williamson is one of the very best players in the world, none of them have the responsibility of captaining their country in all three forms. Not one.
You make a very good point there, Smithy. Hess, what is your take on Aaron Finch stepping away from the one-day game? I mean, he's a great bloke off the field. Everyone knows that. And you could see how much those Aussies love him, really got around him and his family there on the field in his last ODI.
Look, I was lucky enough to work with Aaron Finch for a season at RCB. And he didn't have a great season with a bat, but he was one of the few players that, even when he wasn't performing himself, he would still contribute in every other part of the game. So he wasn't captain at the time, but he was very much a leader in the group. He was battling through his own form, but to a point where he even felt one time where he should be left out. So he's one of those few players who are self-aware enough to think about the team before themselves. And I had a huge amount of respect for him. We'd sort of groomed him as a potential leader down the line if things had changed, because he was that well respected within the group and he was that good a player that we knew he would come out of that rut that he was in. Unfortunately, India hasn't been a great place for him in terms of the IPL, and I think it's been 9 teams that have tried to pick him up because he's that good. On his day, he turns a game on its head, and it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, he turned up the last T20 World Cup having not scored a run and was a major contributor at that tournament with the bat. So it doesn't surprise me now that he's now got rid of this one-day captaincy. He can focus on the T20 World Cup. It will probably be a swan song from an international cricket point of view. And then he can go away and retire in whatever fashion he chooses. But great guy, great leader, both on and off the field. And I'm sure he'll be sorely missed. Just for his honest interviews, really. He wasn't one of those captains that just toe the party lines. He was always very upfront and honest, and I'm sure he'll look to probably head into the media afterwards because he's got those traits.
Oh, absolutely. I think one of my favourite memories of Aaron Finch, just from a cricket playing standpoint, he was dropped, and I said to him, "Oh, mate, that was hard luck." He's not hard luck. I just wasn't scoring any runs. Of course they dropped me. I'll score some runs, and then they'll have to pick me again. And I thought, that's just such no excuses. He knew. He was realistic, and I absolutely respected that about him as a bloke and as a player. Hess, I'd love your take on what Smithy was saying there about Kane Williamson. Maybe it's not the most appropriate thing anymore for him if we look at his form and we look at this last series and we look around the world to be captaining all three anymore.
Yeah, look, I mean, I've been saying this for a while, to be honest, and it's actually nothing to do with his form. It's just to do with Kane in terms of it is a huge demand, and it's a demand that at this stage of his career with family and other things, injuries and so forth, it's too much. It's too much to think that you can sit in every single meeting, every planning meeting, think about the next year ahead, do all those things and be at the top of your own game personally. And I think it's just something that needs to almost be taken out of Kane's hands in terms of, look, you've done an amazing job. I mean, obviously, it would be far better if Kane was to come to that conclusion himself. But I think to do three forms now and also think about succession planning, because at some stage, unfortunately, Kane will retire. And we need to know that we've got those succession plans in place. They've kind of happened by default, really, through injury. Yeah, Tim Southey's capped the T20 side at times, Latham the test side and the ODI side at times. But I think just relieve him of some of that pressure. he can choose which he doesn't want to be involved in, what doesn't float his boat so much. But just let him have some time. And, you know, I really hope they do it sooner rather than later, because it can burn you out. It's happened with so many examples, the ones you've mentioned. You know, Virat Kohli, just a completely different person and in himself after he relinquished some of the captaincy. And then some of it was removed from him, which was probably wasn't his choice. But he's more comfortable with himself now. He's got more time. He's got more time to devote to other parts of his life. And I think Kane would love that freedom, whether he knows it yet or not.
Yeah, I think you could be onto something there. He said,
"We're going to a super over."
Okay, it is time for our second edition of the Super Over, and this is for the Pakistan-Bangladesh Tri-Series. I'm going to start with Smithy. I'll start with you for this one. Question one, Finn Allen or Martin Guptill to open?
Both.
Perfect. Hess, your thoughts?
Both.
Well, that was easy. Question two, who do you think will be the leading wicket taker in that series? Ian Smith.
Trent Bolt, if he plays.
Mike Hessen.
Mitch Santner, if he doesn't.
Oh! Question three, who will be the leading run scorer? Ian Smith.
Devin Conway.
Mike Hessen. Has he got you there?
Disappointing.
Is
that what you wanted? Martin Guptill.
Always liked you, Mike Hessen. I've always thought you're a very bright guy. Very bright guy. Question four. Who is the X Factor player for each team? Ian Smith.
Oh, God, Laura. I'm not sure, actually, to be perfectly honest. Our X Factor player, I think, is Devin Conway. I personally believe Devin Conway is our X Factor player. The other two sides, have they got sleepers? I'm not sure, to be perfectly honest. I think unknown.
TBC. Hess, what's your take on that, X Factor players?
Glenn Phillips. And you go in Bangladesh, you'll go Shakib Alhassan. Pakistan. Fakhar Zaman.
Okay, who was the... I'll check in Baba from Pakistan's point of view.
All right.
And as far as Shakib is concerned, I mean, truly world-class all-rounder. Don't know quite where his game's at the moment, to be honest, though. So I'll still leave that as an unknown.
Okay, I'm going to run all these questions back past you after this tri-series, so you best stand by. No, best stand by your people. Question five. One batsman that needs to stand up for New Zealand for the team to be successful. Smithy.
Kane Williamson.
Hess.
Martin Guptill.
And the final question of today's Super Over, who will be in the final and who will win the tri-series between New Zealand, Pakistan and Bangladesh? Ian Smith.
New Zealand, just from Pakistan.
Mike Hessen.
Ditto.
Yeah, I think you could be onto something there, Hessen and Smithy. I want to thank you gentlemen so much for your time today. We'll be back another episode of Smith and Hessen podcast as we get closer to that World Cup, which is not too far away, as Smithy said, just a month to go. So Ian Smith, Mike Hessen, thank you so much for your time today.
Pleasure, Laura.
Laura. Yep. All the best, Laura. Enjoy the remainder of your little sojourn in northern Queensland.
Oh, thank you so much, Smithy. It is positively balmy over here, almost as balmy as India for Hess. Thank you guys so much, and we'll see you next time on the Smith and Hessen podcast.
Cheers. Thank you.
Cheers.